to episode 14 of the Motorific podcast. Thanks again for joining us. This is Joanne and my lovely co-host, Christy.
Hello.
I don't think we need to give you our last names anymore. I think at this point we can roll on a first name basis. Thanks for coming back to join us. This 14th episode, I'm going to cover some really interesting articles that I found, and then we're going to talk a little bit about selling the motorcycle experience, how some companies do a better job than others, and how that, I think, affects your motorcycle choices and what you're going to ride and how you're going to ride. I think there's a lot of influence there. And we're also going to mention a friend of mine who she just started riding last year, or 2 years ago, and she's already ridden Route 66 back and forth. Right after she learned, she immediately went on a cross-country trip. And she has some really cool photos, and now her and her husband are going to be riding around the world for the next few years, apparently. And they're starting here, and they're going up to Alaska. And so I thought that would be some inspiration for those of you who need an excuse to pull out of the driveway. So what is going on in your world this week?
This week actually is a week where I'm spending without my bike, shockingly enough. I have gotten some exercise heading up to the Bay Area a couple weeks ago. Just came back from San Diego for the 4th. And basically our friend Allison is in town, needed a bike. I decided, okay, I could do this, and basically off the BMW went, and she came back today to pick up a couple of things and my panniers, and pretty much told me that she's in love with the bike. I will actually be getting it back, and she's probably going to look into buying an F800 GS.
So one article that I had shared on my Facebook page, on my fan page, the comments by some of their readers were just a little, just infuriating that these people are complaining about having to look twice for motorcycles. Like this particular woman, she says, "I was blown away when I saw the Interstate 80 freeway signs through San Jose lit up with a message telling me I should look twice for motorcycles. I have driven that corridor for 30 years, logging well over 1,000,000 miles, and I've yet to see a motorcycle that didn't deserve a ticket for some unsafe maneuver. I think Caltrans or the CHP is targeting the wrong audience. We drivers have enough on which to concentrate without adding motorcycles."
Yeah, well, like that hamburger and the cell phone and the texting and all this other stuff. I mean,
right? The public would be better served if signs were used to reinforce basic traffic laws such as signal lane change, obey the speed limit.
Because motorcyclists are fucking crazy and they don't abide by any of the laws. These guys, I haven't ridden in San Jose behind them, apparently. I'm not the description of the motorcyclist that they seem to have blanket coverage for. Likewise, I think a lot of our listeners don't really fall under that category either. But, I don't know, apparently there are a lot of people in San Jose that make these poor old ladies nervous in their cars.
I think there is a pattern of poor old ladies, although they don't give their age. But I'm just going to get... I don't know. I'm just gonna
over guess. 60.
There was actually some interesting comments on the articles, you know, from Facebook readers. Oh, Carla even replied in there. Did you see that?
Ah, yes.
Yeah, Carla even posted in there. And my friend Donna, she even posted in there. I think, I don't know, maybe after I shared it, I think some of my friends went in there to comment. But it's just, I think it's the one bad, you see one really bad motorcyclist, and then it just shapes your perception of what we all are. And there are bad ones out there. I've seen people on bikes that terrify me, and I try to veer away from them as far away as possible on my bike. I don't want to be anywhere near somebody, you know, who's tailgating other cars or weaving too fast, you know, in and out of traffic and unsafe speeds, that sort of things. But I can see where these car drivers are coming from, kind of. Also, these people have most of them I've never ridden. And when you don't ride, you don't understand why the way we ride affects our safety, but also that a maneuver that I think is perceived as unsafe, they have no idea that it's actually to save my life. I'm trying to save my ass. I'm not trying to endanger yours. I'm actually trying to prevent you from killing me. And it's actually a safety maneuver, like swerving or, you know, passing out of a blind spot. I mean, they don't get that. They don't even think about that. They just assume, well, they're on two wheels and they must be crazy.
Exactly. I'm not weaving because I'm showboating or I feel the need to look awesome on the freeway. I'm actually weaving because most of you are texting and kind of doing that lean in towards the biker. Like there's some sort of gravitational pull that I have where motorists just like kind of slide right on into me. And so my crazy weaving or actually weaving, which you may perceive as crazy, is really just getting out of your way.
And
I'm not blanketing every single driver on the road as being some sort of crazy person, just like these ladies are blanketing every motorcyclist as being a crazy person. I'm just merely saying that of the few that I've encountered, that that's, you know, why I'm weaving.
Yeah, I think it's just the fact that car people don't understand motorcycle people. So pretty much everybody's been on a motorcycle. They've been in a car or they've driven a car. So you have both perspectives. But most people in cars have never ridden a bike, so they don't have any idea. And they don't, you know, I think most of them don't realize what they're doing. A lot of the times the things they're doing in their car are unsafe, even for other cars. But it just sucks that, you know, there's people out there who have this perception and opinion. And no matter how many of us are out there riding safely, and there will still be complaining. And, like, I mean, I don't know what we can really do about it. But
she needs to sit in a sidecar is what she needs.
She needs to go riding.
She needs to log the kind of miles that artists logged in Texas. Oh, I really like this one. I have to share it. Basically, this person says their rationale of, we should stop lane splitting because we're the only state out of 50. What makes us better than everybody else? It's because there are more traffic, essentially, and more liberal folks that manage to squeeze that lane splitting law in there before the rest of you old farts in the cars started shutting us down. But the thing that's especially interesting about this comment is, tell me how a motorcyclist can see around corners. I see riders splitting lanes on turns all the time. Actually, tell me how a car can see around a corner, because I got news for you. No one can. It's just luck. It's following through. And actually, I think in terms of cornering, I'm more inclined when I'm driving to look straight ahead of me. But when I'm riding, obviously, the whole concept of follow through and you're looking where you want to go, I'm probably more intent to follow through a corner and see things up the road on a motorcycle. That's the end all. But I can honestly say that when I'm on a motorcycle, I'm looking, you know, 20 steps ahead because I'm looking where I'm heading, as opposed to in a car where I think I'm a little bit more looking right ahead of me. So.
Well, it's obvious. Again, I think that's her perception too, that we're just driving blindly into a corner. And I guess we are, yes and no, to a degree, because you can't see all the way around the corner, but I can see halfway through it if I'm in the right place and I'm going the right speed. I can see a lot of it, enough based on my speed. I can see enough of it. I guess there will always be people in cars who just don't understand. And
well, the thing that also blows my mind about some of these comments is that they're angry that they're startled by loud motorcycles. Frankly, when I'm in a car as a motorist, I am not angry that I'm startled by loud motorcycles. I'm freaked out when a quiet one rolls right up by my window, because I know that the BMW that I have is very quiet, and I know that I surprise the shit out of people a lot of times. So, frankly, I would rather know that someone's coming with a loud noise. Granted, when I'm asleep at night and guys like to use the freeway in front of my house as a racetrack, I'm not as enthused, but I would rather know someone is coming than be surprised by finding out that someone was there when I pulled into them.
Yeah.
You know, there are even people, like, I love how they list their employment positions. So this person works for quality assurance at Mountain Hardware, and I can tell you I'm no longer buying anything at Mountain Hardware. But Yeah,
Hey, one bad apple.
lane splitting is the most dangerous thing for motorcycles and vehicles. And she's also startled. She's upset that they're behind a car and then they're not.
Yeah, I well.
And wants to know why smart cars can't lane split.
Hello, it's because you're five times as wide. Hello.
Yeah, basically, when I have my panniers on and I'm lane splitting, that's about the width of a smart car, I think.
God. See, I couldn't lane split if I had big. Even when I have saddlebags, I don't lane split nearly as much as
Well,
I probably could, but.
as I worked my way down to San Diego last weekend, I realized a couple of different things. It's every county I go in is entirely different. It's like a whole new animal of people and a whole new animal of freeway.
True.
So I'm leaving LA and I see, okay, not needing to lane split because it's traffic's going pretty great because it's an odd hour in the day before 4th of July. Then I get to, and also the freeways are very narrow in LA. Once I get to Orange County, things open up a little bit. I'm able to lane split if I need to, just maybe one or two cars at a time, not a continual flow pattern on the bike. Once I get to San Diego, it seems like an elephant could fit in between each car in each lane. And I'm thinking, this is glorious because if an elephant can fit in between these two cars, I definitely can with two Pelican cases on the back of this bike. So I pretty much lane split the entire way until I got into the city, and then it became a little bit more of an issue. But
It certainly
it's
depends.
possible. Yeah.
True. I mean, some of the highways here too are a little bit wider for sure. But, with the traffic that we have, they just try to cram in as many lanes and cars as possible because there's millions of cars on any given day. So we're there. Period. You can't take us away. We're not going to just stop riding on the highways. We're there. So it doesn't matter how much you complain about, or people in cars complain about us. The fact is we're there. They're not going to ban us, well, not anytime soon, from riding. And these people are just railing against something they can't change. So
We've got Jay Leno and Arnold Schwarzenegger. Take that.
oh God, like two of the worst examples ever. Yeah.
It's people with clout. I don't really care how they ride.
So the good news is that they mentioned the new CHP guidelines as well, and and the fact that it is our activities, lane sharing and the way we're riding, it is okay. It's sanctioned and there's nothing wrong with it. I don't. There are still people in here who are like still outraged by this, but yeah, I think it's just a constant battle. Like, there'll always be people who hate us,
Sure, and there'll always be people who say that, we come out of nowhere. And the reality of it is if you've been driving the same stretch of road for 30 years and logging 1.5 million miles, there's a good chance that you've gotten into some sort of zone where you're not as aware as you used to be when you
yes.
logged that first 500 miles. And I am not going to be the first person to admit that that totally happens to me in a car.
Yep.
I'm in a zone, and then at one point, and I'm not afraid to admit it. At one point, I'll think, wow, did I just pass like six exits? I mean, it's not, I didn't miss my exit, but I'll just sit there and not actually
Right.
remember passing through those exits and suddenly realize, oh, here I am at work. You just fall into this very bad state of complacency where you're not, you're just locked on the car in front of you, looking forward, and you're not breaking a law or anything, but you're just very like,
Right.
Not as alert as you could be. And that happens when you sit there every day, 5 days a week, same route, and it's totally different when you're on a bike. You can't have that level of complacency. You have to be, supremely alert because you have all of those situations around you that you have to make up and compensate for the kind of motorist that unfortunately, a nice long commute like that develops.
Side note, I just check out this article that I just got in my inbox from one of my Google filters. The 10 best motorcycles for women. It's just like all the other ones where it just implies that all women are short. It's like none half of these bikes for you would be terrible.
I haven't even heard of half of these bikes. A Suzuki Bergman 400.
That's a scooter.
Oh.
But
an Inazuma 250.
That must be a new bike. That must be a new model for 2013. It's like a naked.
As long as I'm over 5'6", I'm gonna be fine. Apparently.
A little naked.
A Marauder. Isn't a Marauder like what
a
they
cruiser?
Call the police bike or the police car?
It's a cruiser.
Oh, I'm the low version of the BMW. Not just the regular F650G. It's the low version.
Because you need a low version.
Yeah.
Oh, this is terrible.
Oh, a lowered chassis and a lowered seat. Oh, error. It's definitely written by a person who doesn't ride, because we all know that if you get a dual sport bike, the last thing you want to do is lower the suspension. Yeah, I would definitely, you know, advocate against the 10 best motorcycles for women, because the last thing you want to do is your first bike is to go out and buy a Harley Sportster, which, you know, incidentally is like 800-900 cc, but also quite expensive for a first bike. I mean, I know we've talked about different folks who had different interests on here, but my general opinion, and no one has to subscribe to any of, you know, my opinions, by the way, just as an FYI, my general opinion about getting into something entirely new is to not go out and buy the most expensive thing. To go out and get something used, because in reality, you probably are going to spend, you know, a couple of months with quote unquote training wheels. And you'll want something smaller. And then, you know, after 3 to 6 months, you might get bored of it really fast. And you might also hate motorcycling altogether. And in which case, if you have, you know, a reasonable CC bike that was used, then your loss is not huge. You resell it. You take the money. You put it into a, you know, nice car. Go out and buy the C-Class that Joanne was talking about. But, you know, and it's also a lot easier to get a used bike. And then already has a couple of scratches, because I've got news for you. The first day I took my bike and get a scratch on it, I'm going to cry.
Although they didn't say this article was the best beginner motorcycles for women. It's just the best motorcycles for women. So I can
do
that.
I would like to say that it's got to be steered towards the best beginner, because anything that puts that much emphasis on short, low, and suspension... Gotta be starter bikes.
Well, some of these are. I mean, there's a GZ125 and a Ninja 250. What I don't understand is how do those two bikes end up in a list with a hammer? With a victory hammer?
Someone who doesn't ride, that's how.
I guess so. I mean, the Sportster 883, fine. You know, I've sat on one or ridden one. I could kind of see, I can see that as a decent starter, because it's not crazy heavy. Like, it's pretty low and manageable, but it's like this list is like this really weird mixed bag of bikes. Oh, you know,
yeah.
With a Bergman 400.
Not to knock an adventure women's themed motor, or a women's adventure themed magazine, because after all, you know, I am the adventure goddess. But I just have to say that when you look at the articles that these guys normally cater to, they're so not motorcycling. It's all very outdoorsy sports. So the motorcycling thing was probably out on a limb that they stretched very, very far to get to. So kudos for them trying to reach for the motorcycle category, but they probably should have reached a little further to, I don't know, someone who is in the motorcycling industry to tap them to be able to write this article, because it probably would have better served their audience if anyone was really actually curious.
But see, I still don't understand. I really don't understand the title of this article personally, because I would never write one like this. I would never write one entitled this.
And get your motor running.
Well, not that part, but I mean, the best motorcycles for women. Like, I don't. What exactly makes it best for women? Is it because it's pink? Is it because it's pretty? Is
shockingly,
it?
They didn't mention any of those adjectives in that article.
So
it's emphasis on low.
I just want to know where I want. I mean, I can get that ergonomically we're different, because yes, I think that most women have less upper body strength, right? We're just built different, so we have a smaller upper half, I think, than, say, your average man, I think, maybe, just because we're female. But
that might be a stretch. Have you seen how long my arms are?
I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to, like, figure out why they keep writing these articles and what is it about us as females. I've read, I can't remember where I read it, but there's some shop that does female-specific motorcycles, and it was ergonomics is one thing, where they do shorter bars or stuff like that. So, like, is it because most women have shorter arms, or, like, I want to know why they keep writing these articles. Like, where does it come from? Because we're not all short, that's for sure. Some of us are.
No, we're just as variable as men. But if you're talking about a place that specifically outfits a motorcycle so that it's a little bit more comfortable, shit, that's awesome. Go for it. I'm sure there are definite things on the BMW. Like, I could actually raise the forks or raise the bars up in reality, just to the way I'm sitting. So kudos to them for tweaks.
But you could offer that to a man. There's small men, right? There's tiny dudes that also need to lower bikes, and they could use that. So that's why I have a problem with people continually writing this article. I've seen it 10 times. This bike's for women. Like, I don't get it. I want to know. I want to know if they have research, maybe. Like, you know, with Schuberth, they weren't just making this stuff up, right, for their female-specific helmet. Because I've always been against anything, any kind of helmet that's women specific. I still kind of do, but at least Schuberth is coming from, they actually used real research. Like,
they measured lots of female heads, and my take home from trying on both the women's specific and the regular Schuberth is that I have a man's head, and it's okay.
That's okay. I kind of do. I've got big cheeks. You know, I don't have pretty narrow cheekbones, but at least they came from somewhere with fact, right? So they actually used a study. You know what I mean? They weren't just drawing conclusions and coming up with judgments to make a helmet. They were actually trying to create something based on fact. I just want to know where these people come from when they write these articles.
And then, no facts.
Well, and obviously not a woman who rides. Or a woman who wrote, started to write this article, and the editor is like, no, we can't write that. Or I don't know. I mean, I would just like to know. I wonder if the editor even of this magazine is a woman. Like,
all of them appear to be women. There are three women on the contact page.
So we'll have to, I think we should maybe write a little comment in this article, and please feel free to add your comments to this article, because I would like to know. Half of these bikes I would never recommend to a beginner, that's for sure.
Actually, I think I've got a bit of a challenge, and I think the podcast listeners might agree. Since Joanne is so very opinionated on this topic, I think she should rewrite the article the way that she sees fit and submit it and say, hey, by the way, I'm not sure who wrote this article, but I would like you to know that I've been riding for, what, 5, 6, 7 years, and I, you know, help people in the customer service industry for motorcycles, and I actually disagree, and this is what I say.
But see, I don't even know what I would write, because that's what I don't understand. What basis is there to write that article? The only thing I could write for that is, here are the motorcycles I've ridden. But that doesn't
You can get feedback from groups.
I don't know. That's what I'm saying is, there isn't a best motorcycle for a woman. There are best motorcycles for people. I mean, there's better motorcycles for beginners. There's better motorcycles for dual sport adventure folks who want to get into dual sport riding. Like, there's 10 good bikes maybe for that segment, or the 10 best sport bikes. But
well, sure, there's no single answer for anyone, but I'm sure that there are some fairly common things to learn on, and you can, you know, put it towards that slant. Learning. Beginning.
Sure. I could write that, would be, but I couldn't write the best beginner motorcycles for women. I would write the best beginner motorcycles. Maybe the best beginner motorcycles for short people, or the best beginner bikes for tall people. Because tall people have a hard time finding bikes, I think, just as much as the short people. Like, the extremely tall, like 6'5", like, you're kind of, I think over 6 foot, you're kind of in trouble. because then you're forced to ride, I think, the bigger bikes that aren't really beginner friendly. But I just find this overall, this title puzzling to me. It's too broad. It's too.
Well, you have plenty of time to consider that. I'm in no rush to read your article, so.
Oh, okay. All right. Thanks.
Take a week.
I'll work on it. I'll work on it. What is a Marauder?
You can post it on Motorific.
I will.
This is our response article to this lovely suggestion list of female-oriented motorcycles.
That's a good idea. All right, I'll work on it now that I have time.
So recently, Indian has started an ad campaign putting them back on the market for the American-made motorcycle. Polaris bought them in 2011, I believe. And as well, if you haven't heard of Polaris, who also makes Strikes, which is the first thing that I orient their name to. Polaris also owns Climb and Victory. So Polaris kind of has a chunk of the market. And they've released a new ad campaign for the Indian models that they will be releasing to the American market shortly. So now we have two basically American-made motorcycle, you know, companies fighting over the American market, and basically we'll give you a link to Asphalt and Rubber's take on that whole...
And Victory. Don't forget Victory.
Approach. Victory, yes. Mm-hmm. You can just say it's Polaris / Victory Indian versus mm-hmm. Harley. But as we all know, I think the more interesting facet of the discussion between, like, Harley and Indian is... Harley's ability to not only just sell a bike, but to sell a lifestyle, sell okay. customer service. You know, it's like an experience. So you're not just going and buying a bike, you know, much like I did, going and buying a BMW and occasionally joining a ride with some BMW riders, maybe getting the gear, you know, and mostly doing travel on my own. If you go out and buy a Harley, you're going to have 10 friends instantly that also ride Harleys. You're going to travel with a big group of people. You're probably going to have a girl riding with you, if you're a man, of course, on the back. You're going to have Harley gear, boots, shirts. You know, you're going to wear that stuff when you're not riding the bike.
Yeah.
You're going to go to Harley-specific rallies. Maybe they have a rider course. And I'm not knocking Harley in any way, shape, or form. I'm just merely trying to lay out the things that you may not notice about the Harley mm-hmm. community is that it's very well marketed and well played out. I think we've talked previously in the podcast about how Harley markets to women. And hey, you know, they offer kind of the 2013 version of the Tupperware party where it's like, hey, come to our store. It's after hours. You can hang out. You can sit on bikes. We can talk about motorcycles. They seriously have these events, which, you know, brilliant. Hey, good for you. Not my cup of tea, but whatever gets women interested in riding. I mean, these women may not always ride a Harley, and they might start out that way.
Right.
But they like to have, you know, rider course information, kind of an open house kind of thing. That's kind of how they get you in the door. And then it's pretty much the lifestyle. So to have someone like Indian or Polaris or Victory, you know, try to compete with that, it's just no one can compete with that. Because literally when you think about a rider community, the first thing that comes to mind is Harley. Maybe the second is, you know, Ducati. Ducati has some nice perks. I did notice that they have a special MotoGP package, which the BMW does not.
No. But the BMW,
very crushed.
But the BMW machine is pretty. That's a pretty big machine too. There's got a lot of rallies. There's that whole BMW Black Book thing. There's seems like there's it's a pretty big community. But it you're right. It's not. It's
maybe
definitely
it's
not
just
the same.
Me. You know, maybe I'm more of a loner. Or maybe I don't feel the marketing push. I think as much with BMW, which is fine because I'm the kind of person that likes to go into a store and not get continuously harassed by a salesperson. I usually just say, hey, if I need you, I know where to find you. Stop bothering me. Stop following me around like a puppy. But
sometimes
so,
you might need me because you're picking a jacket that's way too big for you.
Well,
and you need this one.
Of course. When I come to you with my final purchase, then you can voice, you know, your dissent and what I've got going on. But you know, if I come in there, it's mostly because I've already done my homework and I just want to kind of look around. But getting back to the Indian Harley thing, I think Indian's gonna have a pretty tough time trying to compete with Harley in the walking through the door, having the experience, having the clothing, having the lifestyle, having the customer service. I think the last time I thought an Indian was relevant was in like the late 40s when they actually pumped
Yeah.
out really good bikes and then they stopped because the quality started to take a shit, and that was in like the 1950. So Indian hasn't really rebounded since then. So we're talking, what, 60, 65 years being off the market.
Yeah.
So it should be interesting to see what their new approach is and what their offerings are in terms of bikes.
Well, Indian, just like all the other companies, they all have to compete and try to market to the younger crowd because all the old folks are going away. They're not riding as much anymore, and the average age is dropping a little bit more. They all have the same challenge, which is to create some kind of lifestyle and marketing concept. And I don't know if it's because, I think because Harley's American, they get that. They are, right from the beginning of time, they're here. They know the people. They know the country. They, you know what I mean? They're American. The thing I think that's hard is that since most companies are not American, they're Japanese, they're Austrian, they're Italian, they're not American. They'll never be American. You know what I mean? Like they'll never, I don't think they'll ever be able to compete with Harley because they're not us. I mean, they're foreign. And I think as long, I mean, sure, there's, BMW North America and there's Ducati North America, but I don't know. I think there's just something about the company, on the grand scale, the company being American. I think that's how they've been able to build this connection too. And I think customers see that. You know what I mean? Like, I think they, oh, Harley, it's American. I think that really, I think that's what I'm looking for. A lot of people, I think, see that and it immediately draws them in. And you don't have that connection with BMW. BMW,
Sure.
you know what I mean? Like, they're Bavarian. What? Like, or there's just no connection in that sense. I think that's hard.
American made, I think, is a huge selling point for certain people. For me, I just kind of evaluate, well, what feels good to me? I don't necessarily,
Kind of.
that isn't the first thing I consider is it American made?
Yeah, I don't know that. I don't think that's definitely driving them as much as just that whole experience thing you were talking about. But I really think that gives them an edge. Harley, it's American. And I don't know, unless Ducati gets bought by Polaris, I don't know. Or I don't know. Or like, you know what I mean? Like Triumph gets bought by some American company, and I think
Fear
that.
the giant umbrella that Polaris seems to be coming.
Yeah, and it's kind of sad because the bikes are just so much better, I think, in many cases, and people don't look at that part of it at all. They don't compare, is this bike really the best for me overall, regardless of where it came from or who made it? Is this the best for me? Is this what I need? That sort of thing. It just all kind of goes, takes a back seat. Like, oh, it's so
To the
cool.
lifestyle.
Yeah, and I can see, like, I totally see, I'm sucked into it. I certainly would rather ride around town in my Kenneth Cole high heel boots and my mini skirt. And I think it looks, there's certainly a look and feel that's really cool. And I wish I could be a part of that, but I never will be because I just love my body too much. But I totally get it because it's cool. Some of it is, looks cool. And certainly some of the hipster look is kind of cute, with their glittery helmets and. Their little belts with their chains and stuff. Some of it's kind of neat. But yeah, Indian, I good luck. I really hope that they can break in and sell some bikes. Good luck to you, Indian.
Yeah, and I mean, since this is kind of relevant to some other stuff that's been going on in terms of the podcast, our focus is always going to be on gear. And that's just a lifestyle, if you will, that Joanne and I subscribe to. So while we're not, against cruiser riders. I used to be one. I had a Kawasaki cruiser. I have nothing against Harley. I also only have one motorcycle. If I can have like a half dozen of them, I'd probably take a Sportster and chop it up. But, you know, I ride a BMW. That's not to say that BMW is for everybody. I wear gear from my shoes, my boots, all the way up to my helmet. And that's not to say that I've done that from the get-go, but it is to say that at one point in time, I was, Joanne calls them squids. I hate that term. Someone who wasn't properly geared, and fortunately for me, I never had an accident. But as I continually read things about people who have accidents, talk to people who have had accidents, witness that stuff for myself, and get more gear and educate myself, it just becomes something that I never look back. So every time I add a new piece, I, you know, up to about a year or two ago, used to wear jeans and have really great boots and riding gloves and a jacket and a great helmet. And then after BMW hooked me up with a full riding suit, at that point, it just became, you know, if I'm the person that they peel off the road tomorrow because I'm wearing jeans and geared up everywhere else, how much of an idiot am I going to be because I've got this amazing opportunity where this company has given me full gear? And after wearing full gear for a couple of months and then switching over to Revit, I can't ever look back. I can't ever take my bike out with jeans, even if I know that I'm only going, you know, 10, 15, 20 miles. It's just like a feeling of, holy shit, I was naked yesterday. You know, if you want to really draw a comparison, it's the whole Adam and Eve conversation where they take a bite of the apple and they go, oh my God, I'm naked. That's pretty much how it was for me. And so while we always advocate wearing gear, we know that not everyone's going to agree. And that's something that, you know, we understand. So don't think that we're trying to necessarily push you. You know, it's all gear or nothing, and you guys shouldn't listen to the podcast. But just understand that that's where we're coming from, that we're always going to wear gear and we're always going to advocate it. So if that's not annoying to you, you know, welcome to the podcast. We're happy to have you.
Yeah, I mean, wear whatever you want. Wear nothing if you don't want to wear anything. You know, I'll still think it's a terrible choice. I'll never advocate it. I'll never, ever try to encourage you to buy something that's not, I think, at least the minimum levels of protection. Sure, not everybody agrees. That's fine. You don't have to agree and you don't have to follow it, but we're never going to stop advocating it, and we'll never stop encouraging you and everyone you know that rides to gear up also.
After all, her name is Gear Chick.
But
kind of goes without saying.
Yeah, but I was trying to come from the point, trying to talk to the person that already subscribes to this whole ideology of, I've got to gear up to some degree. I'm going to wear more than the minimum. And I typically am trying to reach that person because I find it really difficult to reach people who just won't gear up at all. I don't even bother, to be honest, unless they ask a question or, you know, are inquiring about something I'm wearing. But I will never, I'm not just going to walk up to somebody like, why aren't you wearing a full face helmet? I'm never going to do that. But if you ask me a question, I will tell you everything that I possibly can and more about why you should wear, you know, a full face versus an open or whatever your question is. So I just also wanted to mention a friend of ours that we both met last year. Did you meet, or maybe 2 years ago? I don't know when you met Jasmine, but I met her 2 years ago at Horizons Unlimited, Jasmine and Michael. And Jasmine is Japanese. She was living in San Diego when I met her. Her husband, Michael, rode and had a lot of experience riding. He rode around the world. He has a website about his travels, and I'll post a link to that too. But he's ridden a lot. He's ridden solo everywhere, and you know, somehow he was able to rope her into learning to ride a motorcycle. So she took her class and got her training, and then she bought a BMW F650 and learned to ride on that. And I think just months, within a few months or so after she learned to ride, she and her husband rode Route 66 across the country. And that's after just barely learning how to ride, she set off across country. And that was for fun, I guess, to kind of live the dream, so to speak. And so that was last year they did that. And now they're on a 2-year journey, maybe 4-year, depending how things work out, to literally ride around the world. So they started in San Diego, they left their home, and they're riding up to Alaska, all the way up this side, and then they're going to go back down across Canada, I think, and then further east, taking breaks, I think, for winter, because they're not going to ride like straight through a blizzard. They're going to take a break once the weather, you know, becomes a little bit too dangerous, because she's still a beginner rider. So I wanted to share her journey with you. I'll post a link to her Facebook page and her website. She doesn't really have a blog going on her website, so I'll post her Facebook link, and you can kind of follow her and her husband's adventures. I think what she's doing, since she is new and she's still learning to ride, she even after riding, you know, thousands of miles across the country, she still feels very much a new rider and is still getting comfortable and still trying. She told me that she's finally really enjoying riding. Whereas I think before, since she was struggling to learn and become comfortable with it, it's just taken her a while. So, you know, if you're just starting and you're trying to get comfortable, you're not alone. It's certainly something everybody goes through when they learn to ride, and everybody gets there a different way. I just thought her story was pretty neat because she's brand new, and there she's out there riding cross country and just having a really good time doing it. So if you need a little inspiration, get out of the driveway. There's one. Thank you for joining us. We hope to be back next week, barring any disasters. And you can always reach us at moterrific@gmail.com or on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moterrific. And of course, you can find us both on Twitter. I'm there as Gearchick. Christy is there as ADV Goddess. And we'd love to hear from you. So until next week, we hope you keep the rubber side down, shiny side up.
Bye.